Just over a year ago, Governor Charlie Baker signed a sweeping climate bill into law. The goal? Carbon neutrality by 2050. That leaves us just 28 years to make some radical changes in how we generate, transmit, and use our energy. We'll need to green our grid, so to speak, by getting it ready for all kinds of new demands and technologies. But Governor Baker and other politicians aren't necessarily the ones who are going to oversee the greening of the grid. That task falls to ISO New England, the nonprofit responsible for keeping electricity flowing across the six New England states. It's a historic job, and it will take enormous effort. But they ultimately have a big problem on their hands. Our electrical grid might not be up to the task. Gordon Van Wheely is president and CEO of ISO New England. He joins us now. Gordon, welcome.
Good afternoon, Simone. I'm very pleased to be with you here today.
So, carbon neutral by 2050. It seems like a Herculean feat. Will we make it in time?
You're right. It is going to be a very challenging feat. But I think we all know directionally what we have to do. And if you can give me a few minutes, I could just sketch that out for you.
Please do.
Sure. So the easiest way to think about the electric power system or the grid and the ISO's role is to think about the electric power system as a giant machine that converts many different energy inputs into a single energy output, which is electricity. And as you pointed out, the New England region is on a multi-decade journey to decarbonize the economy using clean electricity, which means we need to maximize the use of clean energy inputs, the bulk of which are wind and sun. However, I think it stands to reason that the wind and the sun is not always available, perhaps for days and weeks at a time. And therefore, we need a stable balancing energy source to balance that variability. And I'll come back to this point in a minute. So in order to communicate about what's needed to make this transition successful, we've recently started talking about the four pillars that are necessary to achieve a reliable, cost-effective clean energy transition. The first pillar is renewable resources to provide the bulk of the clean electricity, and we're already underway with that. We need balancing resources, which include short-duration batteries to ensure that the grid and electricity output is stable and reliable from day to day. We need a long-duration regional energy reserve to stabilize the major energy inputs into the power system for those long-duration periods when renewables cannot produce and to cover energy supply chain risks, which are very much in the news these days. And the fourth pillar is we need sufficient transmission and distribution wires to move the electrical energy from the source of production to the end user. So you can think of the ISO as the air traffic controller of that system. We don't own any of the assets, but just like air traffic control, we direct the traffic to make sure the bulk power system stays reliable. And just to put this into context, we have to make sure that demand and supply match every 5 seconds to maintain reliability.
Okay, so going back to that call for a greener future, is it even possible? I mean, I know there's a lot of money being talked about, being allocated, but in your heart of hearts, is it possible with the electrical grid we have now to reach that carbon neutral future by 2050?
Yes, I think it is possible. There's a lot of work to be done. I mean, many forums talking about what needs to be done. And obviously, it's going to come down to a coordinated effort amongst the six New England states and the policymakers and the regulators and the market participants and the ISO. I think the point I tried to make earlier on with the air traffic controller analogy is we don't own any of these assets. So in order to achieve this outcome, we're going to have to work together to make it happen. And there's a huge amount of work to be done on each of the four pillars. And the one thing I'd like to, you know, just emphasize for a moment, I think the most pressing issue and one that could cause this whole clean energy transition to derail is the lack of a long-duration regional energy reserve to make sure that we can operate through those periods when the weather doesn't cooperate or we have compromises of the supply chain. And we can already see the impact of this problem in electricity and gas prices this past winter, which, as you know, was relatively mild. And the core problem here is the region still relies on imported liquefied natural gas during the winter, and we're competing with the rest of the world for those supplies.
Right. So if we do have to electrify the economy, in the sense of more electric vehicles on the roads, in the sense of heating and cooling our homes using electricity, how much more demand is there going to be? How much more electricity do you think we'll need to produce by 2050?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we've just released a study that has started to quantify the answer to that question. And the answer is that electricity demand will roughly double in the next 25 years or so. And the winter peak, the peak demand for electricity over the cold winter season, is going to treble roughly in that period of time. So that's a massive increase in demand. And really what we're doing is we're putting all our eggs into one basket, which is the electric power system. So we've got to make sure that the system is stable and reliable.
Right. And that brings up the question of transmission, of course. So, you know, no one wants a transmission line in their backyard, myself included. So how do we build the infrastructure to support all this? And where is it going to go?
Well, that's another great question, one that we're all grappling with. It's clear we're going to need more transmission. By the way, we're also going to need a lot more distribution. So you can't just connect all the renewables in at the transmission system without upgrading the distribution system as well. And I think really what it means is we're going to have to find ways to site the transmission and put it in rights of way that will encounter the least amount of resistance, and or take steps to put some of this underground when needed. And so I think what that means ultimately is the cost of building out this transmission system is going to be higher than we may have thought it was a few years ago.
Yeah, right. So that's a huge question here, the cost. We'll need new tech, like grid batteries you mentioned, that don't even exist yet, are being developed as we speak. And switching to renewables has its own costs as well. How do we pay for all this? Is it all going to fall to the ratepayers? And what's that going to look like on my electric bill?
Well, I think there's sort of two answers to this question. On the one hand, this is going to be very costly. And the only entity that ultimately pays for this are consumers of electricity. So right. It will end up on your bill. But some of the cost will be offset by the avoidance of paying for fossil fuels. So, you know, the net effect is not going to be as great as just the capital investment needed in all the new grid infrastructure and the renewables. There will be an offsetting deduction against that because we'll be getting off fossil fuels. But, you know, the net is going to be much higher than what we see today.
Okay. So here's a question for you. A big part of your job is about grid reliability. When we flip a switch, we want to see light. I've been in countries, India, Cuba, where nobody really expects to have uninterrupted power. As we move to more renewables, how do we ensure that the lights stay on, considering, like you said, the sun doesn't always shine, the wind doesn't always blow?
Yeah, so Simone, that's another excellent question, and that's why I raised the issue of a regional energy reserve earlier on in my sort of opening remarks here. Mm-hmm. I think this is our biggest vulnerability in this region. So there's a lot of discussion about deployment of short duration storage, sort of the lithium ion batteries that we all know and love in our appliances and the Tesla power walls and so forth. But as we also know, those are short duration. They are depleted after 2, 4, 6 hours. And what we've got to cope with here in the future is, the Germans first coined this phrase. I'm not going to give you the German version of it, but the English translation means winter doldrums. Mm-hmm. And that's those periods of time when, you know, it's very cloudy and there's no wind and you might actually be very cold. And so one has to cover that situation and cover contingencies that might occur on the system where you have equipment outages and so forth. So our worst fear is the polar vortex event, with major contingencies, or the winter doldrums event with major contingencies. And we need a plan for being able to cover that. So today, the balancing energy source into this big machine that I've just described is natural gas. But as a region, we don't have enough gas pipelines to supply both heating and electric generation. So we depend on importing gas from other parts of the world in the form of liquefied natural gas. And anyone who's been watching the news recently has seen what's happened in Europe with the war in Ukraine. And so you've got the whole world looking to find additional sources of liquefied natural gas, and particularly Europe, because they're trying to get themselves off Russian oil and gas. And the problem is, inadvertently, we are now tied to that economic dynamic. Right. And so I think it's showing up now first as an economic problem, but it may well become a reliability problem in the future.
Well, I think the term winter doldrums pretty much sum it up. The Germans have it right on this one. Gordon Van Wiele, President and CEO of ISO New England, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, WBUR reporter Bruce Gellerman has been on the Energy Beat, and we check in with him now. Bruce, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. So, reactions to everything you just heard?
Well, Mr. Van Wiele really knows his stuff, and he should. But I liked his when he compared the ISO to the air traffic controller. I kind of think of him as like the pilot of a jet plane traveling and flying, and you know, and he's repairing, trying to repair the engines at the same time. And the sitting in the passengers are, you know, me and you, the ratepayers, and the politicians, and the utilities, and the power generators, and we're all complaining about one thing or the other. He's got a lot on his plate, and you know, and as you said, he's, you know, you turn on the light switch and you expect the electricity to come out and do its work. And,
right.
And it's a monumental task in making this transition so fast. One of the things, Simone, that he kept on repeating, I thought was very interesting. And he's making, over the years, I think he's made it more and more part of his presentation, is the need for storage, backup energy, so that when it does get really cold, and you know, we've got all these competing energy sources. And so that's where, you know, he kind of talked about needing new pipelines, and he's a big believer in that because we depend so much on natural gas. But you know, there's a lot of new technologies, they haven't really been proven, which can store energy, and I think that's our future. But you know, you don't want to bet the farm on what you think.
Right. Bruce, you've been at this for a while, reporting on energy needs. What's your gut feeling about carbon neutrality by 2050? It seems like an incredible goal. Is your sense that we're on the path to making that happen?
Oh, boy. You know, it's not just the 2050 goal, Simone. It's the intermediary goals, the 2030, 2040. Mm-hmm. Remember, you know, 2030s, we've got to cut by half our greenhouse gas emissions compared to 1990, and 2040 by 75%.
Right.
So, you know, we've only got 8 years to do that, and we are just kind of on the cusp of doing it now. We're doing it, but, you know, we've got 8 years to get to make very hard decisions and make very big progress. I think in the short run, we're not. I think in the long run, we might, but it's going to be a heavy, heavy lift. I don't think people realize how ambitious these goals are and how transformational we're going to have to be. I mean, it's going to be a new world. But, you know, here's the thing, Simone, we've done it before. You know, when we entered the 1970s, 80s, most of our electricity was generated by coal and fuel oil, you know, and we don't do that anymore. We do a little bit with diesel fuel oil rather in very cold winters, but we only got one coal plant in all of New England. So we've made a radical transformation before. Can we do it again? I think so.
Okay. Certainly I like your optimism. I like your optimism, Bruce. We'll go with that. You know, it's one thing, you know, for a politician to set the carbon neutrality by 2050. Okay. Go do it. Industry, right? But the people who are actually running this regional grid, you know, six states here, they kind of have to coordinate with one another in order for the policies to match up, right? I mean, how do you balance what's happening here in Massachusetts versus the energy policies that need to happen on a New England scale?
Oh boy, Simone, you got another good question there, man. I'll tell you, you can see it. It's very, very tough. I mean, Maine, for example, doesn't want to let many Mainers don't want to let a hydroelectric transmission line go from Quebec to Massachusetts. We need that hydro to meet our goals, and so Maine doesn't want us to go through. Or it's now in the courts in Maine. So yeah, how do you do it? It's very, very tough. We've been successful with REGI, with the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. It's expanding, actually. We can do it. It's a very delicate, hard lift.
Okay, well, tough Bruce, politics. We'll stick with the optimism for now. WBUR senior reporter Bruce Gellerman, thanks for joining us, man.
You bet.